This is the MLW Radio Network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Trigger. I want to wish everyone listening a happy new year. And of course, Dylan, to you, we already talked, but still on air, a happy new year to you as well.
You didn't even say happy new year to me when we talked off the air. happy new year to you.
I just thought,
too.
You know, representative of my tweet a couple of days ago, I wished you a happy new year too, so.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. Happy new year to you, Striga, and all the listeners out there. And most importantly, happy Wrestle Kingdom season for the show and everything going on. Big things going on, Striga. Before we get into the show, I got a shout out. First of all, our fancy new logo for the show that I made. Yes, I did it. Like I said, it's a beautiful, it's a redesigned version of our old one. It's not that different, to be honest.
Blue.
But yes, it's more blue now. That's the main thing. It's much more icy. Like we have
it's the glacier version of our logo.
Yes, I want an all time favorite. I've been playing a lot of Mortal Kombat lately, so maybe some Sub-Zero vibes there. But the red and the blue, it's red and blue, so you've got some blood in there too. That represents your deathmatch taste, I feel like, Striga, more than anything. And mine's the blue. I'm cold on everything, negative on everything. Sky blue, it's all good. But check out that, and check out our new Eastern Lariat Twitter for the show. This was your brainchild, Striga, like I said. So I will give you the credit for that. I live-tweeted the show we're about to get into. I covered everything super in-depth if you want. Every follicle of hair on someone's head, every entrance, every match, all there at Eastern Lariat. The show title was not taken on Twitter, so
yeah, I was surprised, to be honest, that after 5 years of our show that this handle was still free. So very good on that.
There are no imposters. We would have sued them, or I would have definitely pursued some kind of legal action on Twitter. We need to get blue check marks. Do you know how to do that, Striga? Because I think we're big enough now. We both got thousands of followers on our own account. Hopefully, we'll get there.
Never looked into that, to be honest. I don't know.
We need the blue check marks, but happy new year to everybody, more or less, and happy Wrestle Kingdom season. But let's get into what we're here to talk about, Striga.
Yes.
Japanese pro wrestling. Our favorite thing in the world. 2020, new decade. Let's kick it off.
Exactly. So my idea for this show was basically to do a little digest of what we saw on Wrestle Kingdom. And for that, Dylan and I picked each a top five of matches or moments that we thought were great from the first show of Wrestle Kingdom. To put on a little show, just have an output right away after the show ended, and we're going to do that for the second show of Wrestle Kingdom as well. And we're, of course, going to be back with a show on New Year Dash 2. So in recent years, we always did the one show for Wrestle Kingdom and New Year Dash, but now with three shows, I figured one show for each, little digest on each would be the best to do. So this is not going to be some deep 3-hour analysis. Just what we thought was good on the show, what was great, what stood out. We're going to name it. And before we go to New Japan Pro Wrestling, Dylan, obviously we watched some other wrestling already in the year, so it's already been 4 days. So I've watched Japanese wrestling, watched US wrestling, also watched a CMLL show from the new year with a Kawato hair match. So there are lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, I actually watched that match too, so we were both stupid. But no, the match itself wasn't actually that
No, bad. But at least the tag title match was good.
Yeah, the tag title match was really good, actually. Yeah. But yeah, we watched all kinds of wrestling. The Lucha show was good, pretty much. I watched Ribbon Mania just aired, and Nico nice. Nico I watched. Shout out to Yappy. I got her first Ribbon Mania moment. Oh, yeah. Even appeared at the main event in a 30... Oh, there was actually more than 38
people. It was named a 38-person match, but in the end, when they started at number 37, they just went 37-1, 37-2, 37-3, and so on.
But and then they had people like the president of the company came out. Toyota was there, came out of retirement for a one-night retirement for a tequila shot drinking contest. Shout-outs to that show. Big shout-outs to Yappy. And also, of course, some other big shows in Japan. I know you watched the DDT show.
Yes.
What'd you think of that?
DDT had a very good start to the new year, to the new decade, with their show they always have at the beginning of the year, always on January 3rd, Kurikan Hall, All Seats, 2,000 yen. And they had a full house. I really, really liked the main event. Naomi Yoshimura and Yuki Ueno took the KOD Tag Team title from Daisuke Sasaki and Soma Takao in a 28-minute match. Real great moment for Yoshimura, specifically because 1 year ago he was supposed to wrestle Daisuke Sasaki for the KOD Openweight title back then, but a couple of days earlier at the D-King Grand Prix final of that year, he collapsed in the ring and couldn't wrestle, so that match didn't come to fruition. 1 year later, he won the title, the tag team title now, from Sasaki. So a real good moment for him specifically. T-Hawk and Tetsuya Endo became a tag team, and there is some form of alliance between the Strong Hearts and Damnation now, which just sounds so cool. And the tag team match, too, was very cool. And another good match on the show, really strong stuff. They just went out and just had a 10-minute match where they went all out with Chris Brooks and Masato Tanaka in a match that, like, 2 or 3 years ago, you wouldn't imagine to see a match like that on a DDT show. Crazy stuff. Mao is back in Japan. He brought out the Lego. Katsumata brought out the Lego. And they dropped themselves into the Lego there again. Cool stuff there, too. So, very DDT show. Super Sasadango Machine, Danshoku Dino, and Sanshiro Takaki tweeted from each other's Twitter accounts and basically had a battle of tweets there. That was funny too. So just the overall package you will get from a DDT show on DDT Universe just for 900 yen a month. That's very good invested money if you like seeing a lot of variety in your wrestling.
Sounds great. It sounds like it's a pretty interesting show. I actually didn't watch it, but I'll check it out. Let's see if those matches hold up and everything. The main event looks like it's an interesting one.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens. Brooks just announced he's going to be staying in Japan for a year, so shout-outs to Chris Brooks
shout
on that
to
one.
Chris, yeah, great decision on his part. I think he's a perfect fit as a foreigner for DDT.
Yep, and it could probably be some continued success for that guy. And we'll see what he does in the next year in DDT.
You mentioned great main event. There was a very good main event, too, at the All Japan show that happened on the same day as the DDT show happened, but earlier. They had the early slot in Kurikan Hall. DDT had the late slot. Kento Miyahara defended the Triple Crown against Jake Lee, 31 minutes, in a match that we have rated 8.43. I don't know about you, Dylan. I really thought the match was very, very good, but if you just take the matches out of context and as themselves, I was much more of a fan of the Hikaru Sato versus Susumu Yokosuka match for the reason that when watching the match, the junior title match, you would have thought that these two had a long-going rivalry with one another based on how well they worked together and how well their submission counters worked and how intense the match was. But I think it was the first match that those two ever had, and I might be mistaken on that. But for that reason, I thought the match was very well done. And cool finish in the end with Yokosuka picking up the junior title. Unexpected for me, but I liked it. But what did you think about the two matches?
Oh, I thought Yokosuka and Sato was way better, to be honest with you. I thought, to me, these two shows, Sato specifically, I liked Susumu's match with Iwamoto on the first night. That was a good match, but I thought Sato and Kagetora was like one of the best Kagetora matches I can remember. And that's somebody, I've never really been into him that much, but in this match, it's like I saw something. And especially after the Okada match, I thought, man, Kagetora is not bringing it. But here, he brought it, and Sato had a great match. And then Yokosuka and Sato, this was like one of my dream matchups for the title. If I had booked the tournament, this is how it would have gone. And then they came together, and I just thought their match was just amazing. Like, technically sound, great energy, great pacing. It was a really strong match in front of a big Corcoran Hall crowd. So I thought it was just a really great match. And the only thing I didn't like, and I mean, I have no problem with Susumu winning. It's just that the story for the tournament, I thought it would have been really, like I said, it kind of sucks that Sato didn't win. But on the other hand, we get an awesome champion and a new and a fresh face too.
Exactly. So I think that was the main point that they wanted to bring across, that this is a fresh start and no going back to prior champions that we have already seen.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Aokio era is kind of like done now. Like now Susumu is like, that's cool. Like I said, I think it would have been a better moment if Sato had won. But at the same time, like I said, Yokosuka is my preferred champion because, as I mentioned on the last episode, Sato has done it all in the junior division. And now we have somebody with some legs. And I think the junior division in general on both of these two shows, with some of the new guys they brought on the undercard, I just thought they really elevated the division in these two shows. So now where it's like, hey, this means something. And, you know, the tag title match, it obviously had a, you know, there's no way around it. Zeus getting hurt, that sucked.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of hurt the tag division. And we're back to the Violent Giants again, which we've seen a million times. But now you have the junior division has this more fresh face here. Yeah. So I thought that was good. The main event, do you have any more thoughts on Susumu and
Yeah,
Sato?
No, I really dug the six-man tag match, Akira Francesco from Midoriya, Koji Iwamoto against Black Mansoura Kagetora and Masahiro Takanashi, just for the reason that you mentioned. So many fresh faces in All Japan that sometimes just don't get their due in their own company, you know? They are sometimes just not... They're sometimes overlooked, you can say that, in the case of Izumo Yokosuka especially, or Masahiro Takanashi. Doesn't always get the shine that he should in DDT. And here, they come to this junior division that really needs some new blood, and they're bringing that, and I'm very happy for that. And that was the main takeaway for these two shows, I thought, from All Japan at the start of the year. And also, one other takeaway, Lucas Steele debuting and just walking into Curtain Hall as if he had never done anything else. That was just very impressive. He had an impressive debut, impressive second match with Shigehiro Irie on his side. So this guy is a strong get for All Japan.
Yeah, they have plans for him, you know, and that's great for him. This guy's more or less an unknown in wrestling, but like you said, he didn't wrestle like it. He didn't come in there like it. So he did a great job. Like you said, he's a new face. You have this rising Hayato. They had an undercard. And, of course, Izanagi, this mysterious character.
No, they flat out say that he's Atsushi Maruyama.
Oh, okay. Well, he's not that. Well, see, that breaking news, he's safe. he's not missing anymore. So, really, you look up and down the card, and they had a lot of cool stuff going on. And, I like I said, I thought that whole show was probably better than like most of the shows last year for All Japan. I thought they did a great job. The main event, I probably didn't like it as much as a lot of people, to be honest. I thought the middle section really dragged, to be honest. And Kento and Lee, it's just the fact that I never bought into Lee winning this. I know you said that he would win and all these people said he would win. To me, I never thought Lee was going to win this at all.
I didn't rule it out.
You didn't rule it out, but you thought you predicted Lee was going to win.
Yeah.
Like I said. But so, to me, all these other people are saying Lee's going to win, and I said, no, that's not going to happen. And the problem is, like I said, the record is in play. And everybody said it's not going to hurt him to lose. Like, and talking about Kento, they said, oh, Lee should have won. It wouldn't have hurt Kento to lose. That's true, but the story is for the record. You know, like, no offense to Lee, but if they believed in him, he wouldn't challenge three times and, you know, 3 months or whatever. So it is what it is with him. I think he's, and to me, I made this point on Twitter, they really, none of these guys are ready outside of Kento to hold that title. I don't think Jake is. Like, this performance was fine, and he's a good worker and all, but I don't think he's ready to carry the company like Kento is. I don't think Nomura's ready. Aoyagi, let me say this. Aoyagi, his turn.
Awesome moment.
Yeah, like, that was a pretty freaking great impact.
You know, I especially liked how they foreshadowed that in the tag match that Aoyagi won earlier, when Ruchi Sai picked him up and threatened to hit a German suplex on him. That was very cool. Very cool foreshadowing there. Yeah, great turn. You didn't expect that. Close up on Kento's face, and all of a sudden you see him being suplexed by Aoyagi. Shocking moment and great stuff there. Everybody's turning on Kento, Dylan.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he has no allies at this moment. He's like the Iwatani of all Japan right now. But, you know, it's fine. Like, that's a cool story for them. The problem is Aoyagi's going to get all that momentum snuffed out in about 1 month. So, like I said, and leading into the tournament as well. So that's just wonderful.
Yeah, we'll probably get more into depth for the talking point on Aoyagi, Kento Miyahara, and Jake Lee. Some finishing sentences on All Japan for me.
Oh yeah, I loved the Sato Wrestler of the Year thus far. I loved both of his two matches against the Dragon Gate guys. I thought they're awesome.
Early candidate for match of the year.
Yeah, well, I like that match. I don't know about match of the year, but just he had two great matches back to back, and that's more you can say for anyone else at the moment.
So, that's true.
Yeah, 4 days in, Sato Wrestler of the Year. I hope that this leads to Sato's long desired heavyweight run that I want to, because they need new people.
Yeah,
and Yokosuka, great champion. Sad Sato didn't win because of the Aoki thing, but otherwise, love the choice, and I think he's going to do great as champion. So shout out to All Japan, great show. On the 3rd. Check that out if you can.
All right. Then turning our attention to New Japan Pro Wrestling and Wrestle Kingdom 14 in Tokyo Dome. And Dylan, they actually did it. They announced an attendance of 40,000 fans, or 40,008 fans, to be precise here. For the first
set. That was as announced on the Eastern Lariat Twitter, too. We had the scoop.
Exactly.
All right. If you want the scoop, you go to the Eastern Lariat Twitter. I just want to point that out right now.
So they broke the 40,000. They announced yesterday that they would open up the outer fields for standing sections of the Tokyo Dome, and that told you they're going to crack the 40,000 probably. They did it. And so how this is going to go down here on this show is Dylan and I each picked a top five of moments and matches that we'll go through. And I'll just let you start with your number five, Dylan.
Yeah, like I said, just full disclosure, I had a little bit of trouble picking five things I loved from this match. I think the show was definitely lighter, splitting the shows up in two. Like, that's a good little benefit of this format, I will give you that. For me, my number five, in fact, it was so light that my number five was something we didn't actually see, which was Stardom's dark match on the show. I was very proud of the Stardom women for getting to wrestle the Tokyo Dome. This is a huge moment for something. Like, I doubt any of those people ever thought that would happen, that they get to wrestle in front of 40,000 people. Even, well, probably not 40,000 when they wrestle, because that's the start of the show, but still, in the Tokyo Dome, huge moment for them. You can call into question anything you want about, oh, it didn't air, it's not that important, but for those four women, it is, and I was very proud to see. That made me really happy to see. So that was one of my top five moments. I want to shout that out.
You could see that on their faces just from the pictures that you saw. Specifically, I saw the picture from Hana Kimura just standing in the middle of the ring, enjoying herself in the middle of the Tokyo Dome. Martina tweeted out some stuff. She was on the outer fields of the Tokyo Dome as well. Very proud of Stardom there too. So that was a huge moment. And still, though, even though it weren't 40,000 at the beginning, still the biggest crowd that those Stardom wrestlers ever performed in front of. I guess there's no doubt.
Possible.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm sure.
So the reason that this didn't air is just that TV Asahi and the TV channels that air New Japan just don't have the rights to air Stardom matches. That's just what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was your number five.
Yeah.
Good choice for your number five. My number five is Finjuice finally winning the tag team titles from the Guerrillas of Destiny. I thought it was a very good moment. The celebration at the finals of the World Tag League, that was very wholesome. We talked about that. The match itself, I thought, was good. They had a pretty easy, pretty standard formula for the match that Finlay was isolated. They had the same formula for the match during the World Tag League that was done very well too. So here in the end, Finlay was able to break free and win the tag team titles with his partner, with Juice Robinson. So I really like that.
Yeah, that was actually my number four moment as well. So yeah, well, good pick there. Yeah, it was cool. I think that this celebration has to be considered better because there were no Zimas involved.
You have a real obsession with that, right? Like,
I was
finding out
unhappy
why they have that.
Listen, I mean, that would be like, to me, like I said, that's something I saw in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't ever see commercials or anything like that, or even in stores, anything for Zimas here. So to me, that would be like if somebody came out walking with a Surge bottle in the 90s. I would pop for that because I drank that as a kid. But Zimas, I didn't even know what it was, and I never wanted to find out. So I was very disappointed with that. But the match itself was okay. The main thing was Juice's look was horrible, I have to say. One of his worst yet. I think My Little Pony Undertaker was much better than what
definitely,
we had here.
Definitely. My God. Yeah, that didn't crack my top five.
No, that was one of the worst, top five worst moments, for sure, I would say, of Wrestle Kingdom. But Finn, I was so happy for Finlay, especially after he was injured for so long. And I think he had a little something cooking last year, because you remember, he was set to face Tanahashi.
Yes.
If he got to the New Japan Cup tournament, I think that would have been a big moment for him, and he could have had a little bit of a run maybe in the G1. But unfortunately, it didn't happen, and now he got this tag title shot with Juice, and it made it work. It was a solid match. It wasn't too crazy. The crowd didn't blow up for him, but still, the titles were good for them. And I hope, listen to me. Stuart,
yes, I know.
I hope that they can keep these titles and have a good run with them. And New Japan actually tries, just give me a little bit of effort. Give me minimal effort with the tag title scene, the tag division, please, Gato. I'm begging you. If they get that, they could do something special with it. It was time to move on from the Gorillas. Good moment.
If they make it past February and March as tag champions, that's already a huge improvement in comparison to prior years.
Yeah, that is true. Exactly. The bar is low. So let's see if they can clear it, Stringer, because I'm not confident, but hopefully they can.
So that was your number four moment. Maybe you want to shout out something else later on, too. I don't know. But my number four was the match for the IWGP US Heavyweight title between Lance Archer and Jon Moxley. I just enjoyed how they had this hardcore match and just threw stuff at each other. I really loved that. German sports outlet Sport One had a headline immediately after the match. They call it Moxley with a shocking match. And I just tweeted at them, and then I said, nah, guys, that was not a shocking match. There was a cool hardcore match. I think they talk about the plastic bag, you know?
Oh, yeah, okay. Like
Lance Archer brought out a plastic bag, and, you know, to his credit, he tried to kill a guy, you know, finally. And, joking aside, this was a fun hardcore match. They used the stipulation well, I thought. Had some good moments in the match, specifically the bump in the end that Lance Archer took was great. Some great other stuff involving the kendo stick. You didn't like that as much, I think. But overall, I thought it was a very good match.
Yeah, I liked it at first. It just went on and on. Mm. And I think the problem more than anything is that this stipulation, it's a good way to kill everything. Like, whenever you go down for nine, which happened multiple times, as it always does in every last man standing match.
Yeah, sure.
It's hard to make that work for me, and I thought it really dragged, to be honest. And another thing is, I think it was also a victim of my own expectations. It wasn't a bad match, and the finishing stretch was good. The finish was great, like itself, with the Death Rider through the tables. That was a cool finish, a fitting finish. I think the stuff with the claw, like, even when he wasn't counting, he still had him in the claw a lot. Like, you know, so there was really a lot of slow pacing. I didn't really like it that much. I thought it was actually a really disappointing match, because I thought, if you look at the start of the match, this could have been, like, the show-stealing one for me, and I didn't think it did that. I think it definitely got blown by some other matches. But it wasn't the worst on the show. It was a solid little match.
I really enjoyed the action that they brought here. So that was my number four.
The bag.
Yeah, they stole that from Takumi Tsukamoto. He sometimes does that in his Big Japan death matches with the plastic bag.
Oh, did you see the earring that Moxley wore? I was so amazed by that. I thought that might be a spot or something, like he would rip the earring out.
Oh, yeah. I saw someone tweet out that they were glad that Moxley and Archer didn't know that Will Ospreay had a sword backstage. Otherwise, they would have used it, probably.
Oh, yeah. No, it wasn't that... it wasn't that crazy.
That's why I said it was nothing near to a shocking match.
No, they said, but the earring, I just got to give Moxley props for being brave enough to wear that, because that could get hooked into something.
Sure.
And, you know, that could be a bad look, so to speak. So he was brave for wrestling in the earrings, and Archer respected that. He didn't go after the earrings, so I will give them that much.
What's your number three, though?
Oh, here's something fun. Now, I have a little bit of a fun one here. To me, my number three was seeing Jushin Thunder Liger and all of his friends at the Tokyo Dome.
Yes, that's my number three, too.
Yeah, specifically, though, there's one man who stole the show, and that was El Samurai with his gear that he no doubt picked out from his closet probably 5 minutes before he got to
He was on Battleman News, too, with Shinjiro Otani and Koji Kanemoto yesterday, and Kanemoto and Otani were both wearing a suit, and he was just there in a sweatshirt, just didn't care at all. He earned it.
Exactly. Like, he was a great worker. Like I said, shout out to my episode of Thunderstruck with W.H. Park with El Samurai versus Jushin Liger that I covered. So, Samurai, great worker, not the best dressed. Liger, of course, what did you think of the decision of the finish of this match?
I didn't expect anything else, to be honest.
Yeah, me either. I would it really have killed him to just win one of these damn matches?
No, but apparently he just doesn't want to.
But the fans want it, though.
I know.
I understand he doesn't want to, but fans want it.
I know.
If I were the booker for real, I'd say
that you win match. This one. No, I don't
want
it.
Exactly.
Yeah, the first reverse shoot in the history of pro wrestling where someone just loses when he was supposed to win.
No, the first one was Nobuhiko Takada.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yes, where he lost anyway. So I like her. At least he would shoot on himself. He wouldn't accidentally lose. Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, it was really cool seeing all those legends, though, to be honest with you. Who wins or loses doesn't really matter. It was just seeing these guys was cool.
You know, I call it in my top five, I call it Jushin Thunder Liger's homecoming party. He didn't have their homecoming party, but all the guys that were in the match had their homecoming party. Yeah. It was so cool to see all the entrances for Naoki Sano, Shinjiro Otani, Tatsuhiro Takaiwa. Then Kuniaki Kobayashi came out first. You got to shout him out too.
Yeah, big fan.
Tatsumi Fujinami came out. The great Sasuke came out. Tiger Mask, El Samurai. All these guys just coming out on this big, big stage, having their moment with Jushin Thunder Liger. That is, I guess, what he wanted to have. Just enjoy himself with his friends on this great stage and to have this this part of his retirement in this kind of environment. So it totally delivered, in my opinion. It was so fun to see everybody hit their usual spots that we know from them, for decades now. And, you know, it was great to have so many eyes on guys like Shinjiro Otani and Tatsuya Takaiwa specifically, because these two guys can still go.
Yeah.
And man, Naoki Sano rocking a dive out of the ring on Liger, that was crazy too. He looked much better than he did years ago when I saw him for the last time. Man, they all have their working boots on in this match. And you know, specifically, I mentioned on Twitter, if you haven't seen Takaiwa in years past, this guy still brings it. He just throws his bombs and is still the guy that you remember from years ago.
Yeah, I know. See, his style's so like easy to take. Yeah, exactly. Like, he's almost like a mini Ishii, in a lot of ways. Like, he's only got four or five moves, but man, they're all freaking awesome. So, I'm a big fan of them. Hopefully they did something. I don't know if this would even be in the cards. This was just a little fun moment. But man, if they ever wanted to have, like, a retro title match, why not bring these Otani or Takaiwa back?
040 title.
No, just like if Hiromu needed an extra challenger 1 month or something. Like, kind of like Liger last year with Ishimori.
Yeah,
like,
like
those guys would be perfect for that if they wanted. So really cool seeing them. Those two are the standout like workers to me for sure. And it's cool seeing all these guys. Like, it was just a fun match, you know? Good moment. And one of the rare things, because a lot of this undercard, it really didn't belong on what I consider a Wrestle Kingdom.
Yes.
But that did.
Absolutely, you know? Agree. And, you know, opening the show with this match was a bad decision considering what followed this match, because you had two totally dull multi-man matches that would have been fine main event matches or fine mid-card matches in Kirkenhall. But that's not the kind of caliber that you want to have on a Wrestle Kingdom show. I mean, for all those guys, the reason that these matches happened is that those guys got a match on Wrestle Kingdom. And I understand that. But, you know, still though, the matches went, 8 minutes, and the other one went 8 minutes. They both went about 8 minutes. And, you know, you could have filled that time much better, I thought.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, they could have split off two of these guys to have some kind of number one contenders match of some sort.
Or, here's another crazy idea. You could have put one of those matches in between the Ospreay versus Takahashi and Naito and Jay White match.
Yeah, to what end?
To the end.
It still wouldn't have mattered, though. The 8-man match wouldn't have mattered, no matter where it was.
No. But you would have had a little buffer in between those two matches, because after the Hiromu and Ospreay match, I badly needed a break.
Well, yeah. Well, they gave you a break.
They did. But I would have rather had another break of a different sorts, you know.
Then it would have been a longer break.
let's go to our number two, and. Dylan, on my number two, I have Glowcada representing the great Okada versus Ibushi match. Is that your number two as well?
To me, I just picked the whole match, but that was definitely a part. That was definitely a part of it. You know, the glow in the dark entrance was just awesome. Like, great attire for the entrance, white attire, and then the lights went out. The white attire was, I thought, pretty cool when he came out, and then the glow in the dark hit, and I was like, oh man.
You know, what I kind of expected and what they didn't do during the entrance was when Okada was on the top rope and the camera zoomed out, I expected the entire Tokyo Dome to go dark except for Okada on the top rope. That would have made for a great visual.
That would have been a really cool thing if they did that. You should have been like a producer or something for that entrance, because that would have been like really cool. But as it was still a pretty awesome moment.
Yes. What about your match, Dylan?
Yeah, the match itself was my number two, so I think that, man, these two, like, this was so desperately needed, because, like I said, a lot of the card, really, and I know you liked probably, you said you liked the Moxley and Archer match. To me, I wasn't as into that, and then we just had, like, this really bad semi-main event that, you know, pretty much was critically panned.
I didn't think it was bad, to be quite honest. I just thought it was not exciting at all.
It was so, like, what I expected from these two, you know, but really anything else would have been a surprise. But to be honest, though, the show up until that point, even if you liked that match for whatever reason, the show was really dragging. Like, outside of really, there was really one match, I would say, which we'll get into in a second, that really felt like a Wrestling Kingdom match to me on that show. And then we finally get to this main event, and it's like, okay, we've got the glow in the dark. We've got Ibushi. They went at it. The crowd was into it. That's another thing. The semi-main did a poor job of pacing out the match in terms of getting the crowd into it. It was all such a long drag until the finishing stretch.
Let us talk about that later on. Let us just talk about Okada and White now.
But no, this match,
Okada and Ibushi, sorry.
I'll talk about what I want. Thanks. like I said, but we'll talk about the main event. Like I was saying, they did a much better job in terms of pacing, because if you look at the start of the match, what they actually did was minimal. It wasn't like they did a lot of stuff at the start of the match, you know? Even you were telling me you had issues with it. You didn't like the first part of the match.
Yes, but in context, because the show was so long and the match before that was a 33-minute match.
Exactly. So, but what they actually did, though, even though it dragged a little for maybe us at home, they did things that were really smart in terms of getting the crowd, keeping them invested and controlling the crowd. So I really thought that was smart on that end.
No, it definitely was smart. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, but I understand where you're coming from, especially, like, you're super tired at this point, probably, the main event, and, like, most of the Western viewers, listen, we haven't gotten sleep. Maybe I did, because I was smart, even though I bragged about not taking a nap. What did I do? I took a nap right after. See, because you can't trust wrestlers. I've always said this. But anyway, so I really wasn't tired at all. I was after the glow-in-the-dark entrance, my mind was dragging on, and on, and I was ready, like when the glow-in-the-dark entrance hit. So I was more into that. But more importantly, they kept the crowd involved. Then they hit the second portion of the match, and there was a particular point I'm going to mention here that I know you are going to remember. And I know that you, if you saw it, are going to remember. The look on Ibushi's face when he started going after Okada shoot style.
Oh, like, dude. Like, this dark side Kota, whenever that comes out, that goes to show when he's in real main event match mode. He just didn't take any shit anymore. He took this shotgun dropkick from Okada 2 and just got up right away, got up in his face. That was just plain awesome.
And like, he's told more with that look than so many people could do in 33 minutes, or however longer that semi-main event was. Like I said, but most wrestlers could not touch that. No offense to anyone in particular, because that was just unbelievable. Like, not just pro wrestling, but pro wrestling acting. And you don't see that a lot from Kota. He's more of a, you know, like what he, like his actions speak more so than anything. But that look he gave was like top five acting right there. So it was really cool. And that really flipped the switch to something great. And I really think that was the highlight of the match, because if you actually, again, if you look at what they actually did, a lot of the match was kind of like this, you know, Okada normal match. You know what I'm saying?
Okada formula match.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, one of the greatest moments in the match, in my opinion, too, was the camera shot over Okada's shoulder when Kota Ibushi was about to hit the Bomaye and Okada countered it with a dropkick. It was a great moment. Then again, Okada's counter to the Kamigoye, where it looked like that Kota already had him in the Kamigoye, and Okada countered with the dropkick. The sit-out tombstone was an awesome moment, too. And of course, we have to talk about Kota Ibushi styles clashing himself in the middle of the ring. Like, he figured that Okada would be closer to him and wanted to do some kind of a Hurricane Rana stuff. And that didn't really work on any. Dropped right on his head. That looked so painful.
He had no remorse for it, or no regard for his body, and no remorse. So on top of it, but you know, he, like I said, but yeah. So that was wild when he did that. He's kind of a wild wrestler. It wasn't a perfect match or anything like that. But I thought, especially after that Dark Side Kota, like you said, that's a good trademark trigger right now. I think after that moment hit, they really turned it up. And they had this one great near fall where he hit the Kamigoye. And we talked about this before the match. You have this, like, you are a big Kota Ibushi fan. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with this?
I would agree with that, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a big Kota Ibushi fan as well. But you have a tendency to pick him during these matches, whenever predictions come in.
Yes.
I remember a couple of years ago, I was telling you, I was like, he's not going to win. He doesn't have the contract. You were like, yeah, but I'm just going to pick him anyway. You got very annoyed with me, because I was like, I was totally not buying into Ibushi winning. And Tanahashi did win at the end, but here you picked him again to win, and I was like, no, Striga, Okada's going to win. They're not going to give him a one-night title reign. And then, so I never bought into it that whole time. But when he hit that Kamigoye, like he finally hit it and pinned him, I thought he's got him. I was like, he's going to win. I was like, I couldn't believe it. Like, they're actually going to like not put Okada in the main event. I almost jumped out of my seat at that. That was like an unbelievable moment.
You know, after Naito won the semi-main event, I was very happy that Kota Ibushi didn't win here because,
You don't like their matches.
No.
That's okay. So your prediction was half right, I guess you could say. But Naito, like, that was a whole other thing. But Ibushi, you know, still, he brought me into it, you know. And it's like, this show, like I said, to be honest, did not feel like a Wrestle Kingdom to me. Probably 4 hours of this, like 5 hour show. But when they got there, when that happened, I was like, they brought me into it. This is the dome. Like, this is the main event. Even though it's like not really the main event of Wrestle Kingdom, like, it is the main event now. So I was so into it. And finally, the climactic moment where I predicted on Twitter, I said, maybe he needs a new move or something to win this match. That would really help the Rainmaker finish for tomorrow and just pop the match. And then he did a new move, Okada did, before the finishing Rainmaker with the little sit-out bust thing that he had.
Yeah, just a little spin on that. Just like a mixture between a Fire Thunder and a Tombstone Piledriver. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it was like a whole new version of his normal stuff. So I was like, yes! Like, I'm a genius right now.
Wow.
But that was my first one. I was like, I'm brilliant. But secondly, I was like, man, this is a freaking great-ass match. Like I said, like, even though a lot of it was the Okada formula, I was like, man, they killed it. Like, this last part, I got to give them credit.
No,
like,
this totally
was way better. Like, other Okada formula matches never hit that. Like, the Sonata matches, to me, never hit this level, the last match. And also, again, the crowd was so into it. Like, by the end, it's like, this was the main event to these people. 40,000 strong, what a moment.
You know,
controlling
the room when you're wrestling in front of 1,000 people is one thing, but controlling the stadium when you're wrestling in front of 40,000 and controlling the stadium with, like, I don't want to say that little, because it was one hell of an effort by those two, but they have the ability to just do so little and to get the maximum reaction out of it, and that is what they did here too.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, it was a total, like, it was exactly what this show needed to end off, especially after the other match was, like, really the opposite of this. It's like, this totally ended the right way, and you had the big stare-down moment with Okada and Naito at the end. Everything about the presentation was awesome. Even the graphics, I thought, were great for the show. The video was really nice, but the entrance, the match itself, the finish, and then the post-match with Naito and Okada, I was like, okay, we're ready now. So that, to me, had to be up there. Like, to be honest, that was, like, objectively, even though I like the other match a little better as a match, like, this was actually the biggest moment of the show, you know?
Yeah, you know, we mentioned match pacing, and from there on, there's number one for us. The pacing of the match that we both have on number one was, I don't know how to call it. There was pacing. There was high pacing all the time.
Yeah. Like, they didn't pace nothing. It was all out.
One thing in the beginning had me wonder a little bit if that match would really be that high caliber of a match that we would all expect, was when Will Ospreay, in the beginning of the match, again displayed his heel persona that he somehow adapted through this Hiromu storyline in December, that I totally don't get why they do that. And he did that briefly in the beginning of the match. But then they just figured, oh, what the hell, we throw the kitchen sink at each other. And they did that for 25 minutes almost. There was no time to breathe. There was no time to look away. There was only action. There was action, action, action. But amidst all that action, they also had a very good story in this match, based around the hidden blade that Will Ospreay hit in his third attempt, finally. In the first attempt, Hiromu was so beaten down that he just went down before Ospreay could hit the hidden blade. Second time, Hiromu ducked under the hidden blade. And for the third time, he was finally hit with the hidden blade, which was built up as one of the most devastating moves in the match, attacking Hiromu's neck there. So that was done very well, in my opinion. And then in the end, just going to the time bomb 2, new finishing hold for Hiromu. Most outstanding moment probably in this match was the sequence based around the Sasuke special that Will Ospreay hit on Hiromu Takahashi. He first went out of the ring standing, was thrown back into the ring by Hiromu, went out again with the Sasuke special. That was mind-blowing stuff.
Yeah, that was, like, athletically unbelievable. Yes. But, you know, as much as that was, like, a crazy, like, sequence, like you said, unbelievable athleticism, great pacing, the crowd loved it. What really stood out to me even more than the athletic stuff was how on point Ospreay was with those strikes, like the hidden blade. I thought that was one of his best that he's hit. Like, you know, the Robinson special, he hit it right on point on Hiromu's head.
And that was one other thing that I noted. Amidst all this crazy high pacing, the precision that these two displayed was absolutely mind-boggling. Everything was so smooth and was hit with such high care for one another. It was just incredible.
Oh man, it was great. You know, and like I said, it just showed how on point these two were. It's like they hit everything they wanted, like you said, with great precision. The crowd, and historically the crowd with the juniors at the Dome, has not been kind. Mm-hmm. Just remember last year with Kushida and Ishimori, or 2 years ago when Ospreay won the title in the four-way. Like, you know, really, to me, every junior match, there was one with Hiromu and Kushida that was really strong, like that got a good reaction. I think that was Hiromu's debut or something, or one of his first matches. Mm-hmm. And that got a strong reaction. And this, again, the crowd bought into it, and they hit everything with precision, which is good because Ospreay, like, especially on like that Robinson special and stuff like that, it looks pretty bad sometimes, let's just be real about it. But this time it looked perfect. they hit him on the apron. It was a great moment. Ospreay did it. And even the spot that I love, which is always a favorite of mine, when he did this the first time I jumped out of my seat, it was against Ibushi when Ospreay did this. He did the flip right into the powerbomb setup, but then this time Hiromu countered out into the flip pile driver in midair, which I thought was I thought that was even better than the Sasuke special sequence, actually. So there was all kinds of moments that you could love in this match. And like you said, finally, much like Okada in the main event, although I didn't predict this one, Hiromu with the new move, with his time bomb, package Emerald Flosion type of move that he has, Time Bomb 2, as you've labeled it. I think it was a great finish.
That's the official name.
Yeah, see, perfect. Time Bomb 2, minus points for creativity. I say that.
Yes.
But besides the name, the move's cool, and it was a great unexpected finish for the match as well. I think the only thing holding this back was similar to the main event actually overcame it. I think that's the one thing the main event had over this one, is that they made me believe Ibushi could win, even though in my head I really knew Okada would. In this match, I knew Hiromu would win, and I never once thought Ospreay would win. So I think that's the only negative I would have for the match. And Ospreay, great work. That wasn't on him at all. These guys did an awesome job. And both of those, I think really both of these last two matches, I think they're great in different ways, but there's stuff that you'll remember. You know, until the end of the year, I would say these are going to be remembered matches. Depending on how tomorrow goes, of course, but I think they were both awesome in their own ways. And then, like we said, we had the top two moments, so if anything, it at least saved us some time on the show. But we agree, pretty much.
So those two matches, really outstanding. Looking at Cage Match right now, Flosh was so kind to put all of the matches that were recommendable into the match guide. And right now we have Hiromu versus Ospreay at 9.55. This is obviously right at the end of the show, 1 hour after the show.
Yeah, who knows how this is going to change.
Exactly. Yeah. Okada and Naito at 9.71. And then, not so far off, Dylan, with a rating of 8.56, the semi-main event between Tetsuya Naito and Jay White.
Everyone I saw on Twitter didn't like that match, so I don't know who's voting for this.
We have 80 votes right now.
The inmates are running the asylum, I think, right now on Cage Match.
I know you didn't like the match at all, and I was not a fan either. I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna say this about the match.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm not mad. Just say what you gotta say.
Why would you? I just said that I was not a fan of the match either. So, first of all, I thought the positioning was incredibly bad following the Hiromu Takahashi versus Will Ospreay match. To have this kind of match follow the other kind of match that you had. And then you go out there and have a 33-minute match. I remember back last year when Okada and Jay White just had this crisp 15-minute match, and I loved it in the Tokyo Dome. And now here we again have this 33-minute match that totally lacked any excitement. And, I was not a fan of it. But to be honest, Dylan...
I was gonna say that match with Okada was probably his best match. To be honest.
Yeah,
and
I don't get why these matches have to be that long all the time. There is just no reason.
Their last match too, I thought really dragged.
Yeah.
To me, you just have to look at the crowd. Compare the opening part of that match.
The crowd was very into the match.
The final part, yes, but they drilled in and out on a lot of that stuff.
That's true.
The finishing stretch, they got it, but for a lot of it, they dragged out. And the main event, they did.
The main reason that the crowd was so into the match is that everybody wanted Naito to win.
That's true. That they really weren't into it for most of the match. It was really when Naito would get on offense, if something crazy would happen, like the ref bump, I obviously hate that.
Yeah, shenanigans were coming that you could expect. What did you think about Naito in this match?
Oh, he was pretty sloppy. Even on his part, he messed up a tornado DDT spot.
Not only that, he also messed up the sling. That's the moment that you mentioned. The slingshot tornado DDT.
Yeah, exactly. And he really blew off the selling, because that's another reason why I didn't like this match at all.
Yes.
A lot of the boring stuff was White going after the leg, and it really wasn't interesting. He didn't do a particularly good job, but you could at least sell it some by the end. And like by the end of it, it's like, the only thing I ask, I'm not like super in, you know, you don't have to freaking, you know, act like you've been shot if somebody works on your leg, but make the match matter, you know, make the early part of the match matter at some point. And I know that's a problem in a lot of New Japan matches, but it doesn't make it any better like for this one. And especially this match, I thought was, you know, because the thing is, they could have had a little bit of an interesting story, and I could have been like, well, I didn't like the match, but they sacrificed a good match to tell the story with Naito. Underdog, the legs hurt, he's got to overcome the odds. But by the end of this, that really wasn't even a part of it at all. It's just like, well, that happened. Like, you know, I won. 33 minutes, I get to go to the Dome. And the crowd was into it because LIJ fans are going to always love Naito.
Yes, and they wanted Naito to win.
Exactly.
You know, when I saw Naito, I don't know. He feels like he's a shell of himself. To me, at least. I don't know. As you said, LIJ fans will probably always love him, but to me, the guy's done.
Yeah, the fans were behind him, but to me, actually, the main event was more over than his match. Like, I don't know if that's like a hot take or something, but I thought peak for peak, the whole match was definitely more over in the main event than that match, but I think a lot of that can be attributed to White. But even the peak for peak, that crowd popped for the main event finishing steps more than the other one. That comes down to the wrestling, but I think you have a point. Naito has a ton of merch sales, too. You have to look at that.
And let me be a little bit more specific on that, part of that he's done. I'm not saying that Naito has to retire now, immediately.
Yeah,
like that. I'm not saying that, but you can really see that he's not as close to on point as he used to be a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah. To me, as a wrestler, I honestly was never that high on him, like even as a babyface. I thought he was actually... Because the thing is, when he first came in, history will tell you that he failed as a babyface and sucked. But actually, the first part of his career, until his injury, pretty much, he was the one that many people thought was going to be the next guy.
Yeah.
Like, his match with Okada got a huge reaction in 2012, and everyone was like, all right, like, he's ready. But I never saw that in him, to be honest. I thought Goto was a lot better back then, to be honest. But then he came back from injury, and I was like, ugh. And he turned heel, he had a hot moment, but then they had a lot of stuff that I didn't like, but he got super over, admittedly. I think his peak run was really 2 years ago, which is why I think that that was ultimately a mistake, because Okada would have still gotten here. Like, they would have protected him no matter what, but Naito, he really needed that moment, because he doesn't feel anywhere close now as he did 2 years ago at the Dome. Even if he were to win this title tomorrow, I think it's... Like, that really has to be looked at as a big blunder for him. And because, look, the guy's getting older. Like, he's not some chicken. Like, he's had many injuries. He even said he had this interview coming out where he was like, I didn't know if I could wrestle anymore.
Yeah. This last year probably was very hard on him.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I think his body's taken a lot. I do think a lot of that, like, to me, and you know me, Strig, I've been on this Okada's going to win train for ever since the G1, pretty much, or ever since they announced this double title. But, like, the build-up to it is kind of giving me pause, because they're telling the story of a guy who he lost everything, he was near the brink of, you know, destruction, and if he loses this, he has nothing. It's like, they're kind of making it seem like he could win, even to me. And I think a lot of people think he will win. But I still think Okada is the one that they trust in these moments. And I just thought there was no chance in hell they were going to go out of the main event with him not in the main event of the second Dome match. But we're going to see. Now that your prediction has failed, Ibushi lost, and you were happy about it. Like I said, sometimes you're wrong and you want to be wrong. So that's cool. Mm. But Okada and Naito, who do you think is going to win now?
I'd go with Naito, because I don't know for how much longer they can prolong this and have him be that hot while still being physically able to have a good title run.
Yeah, I just think they've got one more year left in them. And that, like, to me, I guess, to be honest, let me paraphrase this. I think it's possible he definitely wins. I definitely changed my mind from being like, I was like 90% sure Okada would win. And now it's more like, you know, 50-50 type of thing. I think the thing that's going to separate this is if they do two Dome shows next year. If they have one show, then Okada, I think, will win. Like, if they announce that there's only one Dome show next year, which we don't know what they're going to do on that end. Yeah, exactly. Like, if there's only one show, because they could build that. Like, that's a story in and of itself, Naito finally getting the win. And personally, I think a one Dome, like, one main event, Naito winning, is much better than this, which feels, and I said at the start of all of this, that feels like a really cheap way to end this story. Like, a second Dome show kind of deal at a mini tournament. I just don't think that's as, like, to me, like, and maybe I'm wrong in this, and I think the fans are going to go crazy no matter what happens. I think this won't be like 2 years ago where the crowd died when Okada win. Even if Okada was to win, I think the crowd would, like, pop for that. But if Naito wins, it's going to be a huge reaction no matter when it happens.
Sure.
But I just think it would be better if it was a, like a true singles matchup, have a, you know, build throughout the title. I just think it would be better that way.
And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they held the title switch off for, I don't know, a month or two. They still have these big shows coming up in February and in April. Oh, we'll see about that.
You think Naito could win and lose the title?
No. Naito loses now and gets the title at another point this year.
I don't think that's going to happen. Like for him to win, he needs to win. Like, the Dome is what's important. But the thing is, they set this up. Like, the way they built this up is, he specifically said, even if I win the title, it doesn't matter.
You know, Dylan, we'll see tomorrow. It's too much speculation on a show that is happening tomorrow.
it's a one-day build. Anyway, that's just my speculation.
Yeah, closing out the show, Dylan, you had thoughts on the Tokyo Dome. I also thought that there was too much filler on this show to be a real Tokyo Dome caliber kind of show. That's what was missing, in my opinion. Overall, I really enjoyed the show. It was kind of burned out after the Hiromu versus Osprey match, so I didn't really like the pacing afterwards, but still overall, I enjoyed the show. And on the topic of predictions failing us, Dylan, I don't know if you've read that already, but Goshi Ozaki, in fact, became the GHC heavyweight champion.
You spoiled it for me. Well, it's not on there, but I just think that's such a dumb idea. Like I said,
I had to call you out on air. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Like I said, I just think that's such a poor. I'm really disappointed in it, to be honest with you, more than anything. It's like you kind of portrayed it like I was mad. It was more like I was baffled at the idea of this. And now
I know. I'm just enjoying myself here.
I'm just really disappointed, you know? I think that Kaito had a great run as champion.
Yeah, I agree.
I love Go.
And you know, I agreed from the first moment on what your entire point was, but I just said, maybe they'll just do it. And they did.
Like I said, I mean, that's fine, but like I think it's a mistake, ultimately. We'll see. To be honest with you, I hope that the crowd takes to him better this time.
Yeah.
I'm just going by history. Title reign. And even now, he doesn't feel like the top guy in the company to me. Kaito had it, like I feel like. But, you know, it is what it is. And tomorrow we'll talk about the mystery show some more. See who they bring in. That'll be good. As far as the Dome, like I said, Kaito Go, I have to wait till I see it to really give much thoughts on it, see how the crowd reacted. The Dome show, though, I think, and I asked a lot of people on Twitter this. I said, hey, let me know what you thought of the Tokyo Dome show. What was your match of the night and all that? And pretty much everybody that responded gave some variation of it was a two-match show. There were two good matches and the rest we could have done without. And I think that's really, like, that's really the match. Like, that's really the show. Although I liked I think that I would have kept the Liger match on the show for the moment. The rest really didn't feel like Wrestle Kingdom to me or anything that I'm even going to remember a month from now, to be honest with you, other than the semi-main event for the wrong reasons. But maybe some people loved it, the inmates. But other than that, though, it just didn't feel like a Wrestle Kingdom, and I think that's a consequence of splitting it up.
Exactly. And still, Dylan, tomorrow, on the point of tomorrow we have much less filler matches on the card.
That's true, and that's kind of what this feels like. This whole show felt like kind of like, and some of the last comment I got was from somebody who was saying, it's a satisfying appetizer, and I think that you could go there, because it ended the right way. The two matches were so good that it kind of made it worth it. Like, there's nothing like that was, like, so terrible that I hated, you know, that it ruined the show for me. Like, even the semi-main event wasn't, like, this atrocious performance. It wasn't a good match, but still, like, it didn't kill the my vibe from the show. And they ended it on a good note, so I'm looking forward to tomorrow.
Exactly. So that is a good closure for our show today. As you already pointed out, we have our own Twitter account for the show now, so go follow at Eastern Lariat on Twitter for all the content on all the shows that we have on the Eastern Lariat, both our free shows and our Patreon at patreon.com/EasternLariat. Dylan and I will be back tomorrow with another show on the second part of Wrestle Kingdom. Until then, thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
Stream worldwide. This is the MLWRadio.com network.